Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so much to talk about right there in Susie's newscast. I'm tempted to start with Jake Lang, because that's where Chad and I left off at the bottom of the hour, and I think it's worth continuing the conversation because it is, man, I hate our community being used as a prop for these agitators who come in from out of town just trying to get digital likes, digital clicks, get their hype, get their name out there. And we sort of get roped right into it, don't we? The question is, what should we do? Jake Lang is so racist and so extreme that when the Minneapolis police sent out their release this weekend about arresting this clown, they called him a far, like an extreme right agitator? Is that?
That's what I heard.
When the cops, instead of saying, you know, 24-year-old man or whatever this guy is, I confess, I couldn't give one rip about this guy. I don't care about him. I don't know anything about him, but I hate when they use our community as a set, as a backdrop. This guy cares 0% about Minneapolis. It may as well be Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Cleveland. He doesn't care. He flies in from wherever, does his show, provokes, has a sign up with the N-word on it. But man, we just, in Minnesota, we love to protest. We love to show up. We love to organize so dang much that I think sometimes the logical thing would be to stay home. 651-461-9226. Wouldn't it have been better if no one came? I'll tell you, my career as a TV reporter, I have been assigned to cover protests where six people show up to protest, and you know what you do? Go find another story. It's over. If Jake Lang and his kind of ragtag group of racist boneheads showed up in front of City Hall in Minneapolis this weekend and nobody was there, but we can't help ourselves, can we? I think Minnesotans cannot help themselves. We love to protest and to freak out and to be self-righteous so much that, in fact, it ends up hurting our own cause. And in this case, it would have been better for everybody to stay home. Maybe you're out there. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you think the right way to respond to hateful rhetoric is to show up and yell louder. I think there are times that that approach makes sense. Did it work out for anybody this weekend, do you think? I don't. I don't think it worked out. Texters at 651-461-9226 say Jake Lang's free speech protections end when he shows up with what are considered fighting words, which he always does, I think that's right. But if no one was there, who would care? Right? Doesn't that make some of these goons go away? If you just didn't show up and said, you're not worthy of my attention. It's a weekend, man. Like, I know, I know if you're a left-wing protester, it's been a little quiet for a while. You haven't had much to protest. You probably hit your peak during Operation Metro Surge. Lots to protest. And it's been, if you love to protest, which I do think people love to protest.
Starting to.
But I think, why show up? Why show up? And there were a lot of freaking people there. I couldn't believe it. And the mayor said, and I get it, if you're a professional protest class, and by professional protester, I don't mean like what the goofballs on the right say that, oh, so-and-so are getting paid. I'm saying like you love this. You love it. You love to show up, and you love to tell people how wrong they are. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Just go for a walk. Go ride your bike. Go take the weekend off. Ignore this clown. He is a clown. He is an agitator. This is not a serious policy person. This is not an elected official. This is a nobody who gets oxygen based on the creating anger and getting people to show up. And Minnesotans showed up. They showed up aggressively. Then they freaked out on the police. The police are escorting Jake. Well, what do you want to happen? Police are supposed to like fall back and let the goofball protesters like murder this man. I think it was embarrassing for Minnesotans. The more I talk about it, I think this was embarrassing for us. It would have been the grown up, neighborly, smart approach that I was praising all during Operation Metro Surge. It would have been the smart approach to ignore the dude. Texters at 651-461-9226. Jake Lang is an agitator, nothing more, nothing less. And while he may be trying to be a patriot, his delivery is absolute horse bleep at best, and I lean right, but this guy is a clown. On YouTube, Ugel says, I only wish Jake Lang and his crew were there to show off a tiny crowd. And said Spider-Man showed up and attacked. Texter says that my attitude on this is because the N-word doesn't directly affect me because that word means nothing to me in my history of being. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that by not showing up, you're tacitly endorsing it. I'm saying the opposite. The most effective way to shut guys like this guy down, racist, hateful, agitators, is to totally ignore them. Totally ignore them. And I understand in our world today, that is not an accepted opinion. I'm sure some Instagrammer is going to take this video and make it look like I'm on Team Jake Lang, which I am not. On YouTube, commenter says it's the principle of the whole thing. You have to show him that scum like him and his followers are not welcome here, period. Why? Why do you have to show him that? Like, did that point get made to Jake Lang? Do you think he's sitting in the jail cell today thinking like, man, they sure told me? Yeah. No, he's sitting in the jail cell thrilled because not only did he get arrested, which makes him be a little more of a martyr, he now I'm talking about him. I didn't want to talk about him. Jake Lang is a Temu Tucker Carlson. I like that. Jason, of course you say ignore him. You're not a minority. He's talking about my parents, my grandparents. This hits us different than a white person. I Look, in no way can I fully understand what it's like to be on the receiving end of that sort of hatred, of that sort of racist. You're 100% correct that my lived experience as a white man in no way lets me understand how viscerally a racist like this would hurt you. That said, there are hundreds of thousands of people spreading racist rhetoric around the country. And so I do think it's reasonable to say, what is the smart way to deal with it? What is the most effective way to shut it down? It feels good to get out there and tell them to cram it, to get out of here. It feels good. But is it smart? I think it's not. Texter says, I say this all the time, regardless of what people are protesting or who or what. My question is, how does everybody get the time off from work? What is the weekend? Like, come on.
Most people.
Anybody can take a day off or an afternoon off. If you care enough about something, you take the time off. Mm-hmm. Texter, it's a catch-22. If you don't show up, they don't show. Better to know where the Nazis are than to have them hiding under their troll bridge. There is some. I do understand that argument, that just by being silent and not showing up, it doesn't make the hate go away. Mm-hmm. But does this make the hate go away? Does this change anyone's mind? Jason, you see how quickly it escalates. Protect all your people, not just some. We know who our allies are. The reason an Instagrammer will take this is because it's not allyship. I don't care about allyship. I don't care. Do you get to put a badge on and say, I'm an ally? Like, who cares? I believe allyship is action. It's dedicated over time. Being a true ally is not showing up to one dumb protest about an agitator and then, like, throwing stuff at him and having a big dispute. Is that allyship? No. I don't think it is. We all have different ways of getting there. I think, because I disagree with showing up and screaming at this racist, I don't think that that indicates that, oh, well, you're like, DeRusha's racist. Like, come on. With this style of debate and discussion is, I don't know. Do you feel it gets anywhere? Does it get you anywhere? Or does it just make people feel like they're superior in their position? Are you changing minds? Are you moving people forward? I don't know. I don't know. I think not. Keep the texts and comments coming. Your calls welcome as well. 651-461-9226. All right, I'm going to give our YouTube commenter the last word on this, because I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, at a certain point, I'm trying to make the case that we should ignore the guy and not give him oxygen. And I'm giving him oxygen. On YouTube, commenter, Hubbard sucks. I mean, they're nice people. Come on now. That's the name. Our YouTube, I always struggle. Do I read the actual username of these folks? Why not?
You could.
You can't stay silent when the speech is so vulgar that it goes against everything Minnesota stands for. I mean, ultimately, I respect that. I respect it. I disagree with it strategically, but I respect where in your heart that comes from. It's hard to argue with that, right? I want to talk about tariffs because finally, this country is taking on our number one enemy, the country we hate more than any country in the world, and that, of course, is Canada. Because why wouldn't it be? Are you sick of tariffs? Are you sick? I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the back and forth. I'm sick of the uncertainty. I'm sick of going to war with countries that are our friend and our neighbor here in Minnesota and our critical trade partners to our farmers. I think the art of the deal has been a failure in this case. The tariff situation really is, I mean, it's fascinating from a real politics standpoint, is your goal with threatening Canada, with escalating a trade war with, again, I repeat, our enemy, Canada, is this about a threat to get to a better deal, or is this a real policy of this country in saying, here's what we believe tariffs should be? Originally, when the president was bringing forth the idea of tariffs, I was skeptical, as every economist has said that tariffs only drive up prices for American consumers because, you know, we're in a global economy now. It's not 1942. But I do support tariffs in certain circumstances. American businesses are competing against foreign businesses that are paying people pennies on the dollar, that are heavily subsidized by their governments. And we got to even the playing field. Evening the playing field, though, is not really what I perceive these threats and these negotiations are really about. I think it makes sense if you want to pick one industry and say, we're going to build this industry in America, and so we're going to tariff the living crap out of anybody who builds cars. We're keeping the Chinese EV manufacturers out of America. That's just what we're going to do. And so if you want to build cars in America, you can do it. Blanket tariffs, to me, make no sense because there's not always a substitution that a consumer can make. And so you're really just raising prices. You're not protecting American jobs. You're not protecting any American interest at all. Right now, we're at war with Iran. Gas prices are high, high, high. And so because we failed in this war, and we're costing Americans so much money, now we're like, let's pick a fight with Canada. The head of the Minneapolis Fed was on Face the Nation yesterday, and I want to play a little bit what he said, and I want to know what you think. Are you sick of these tariffs? Or are you defending the tariffs? And then I want to know, all right, what, where are you going with it? Is it to get a better deal? Or do you really believe that we should have heavy tariffs and protect American jobs? 651-461-9226. Here is Neil Kashkari on Face the Nation.
Well, Canada is an important trading partner for America. We talked about the 5 years of elevated inflation that has largely been driven by what we call supply shocks. One of those supply shocks is the trade and tariff conflicts. And so to the extent that we can get to a new normal, whatever the trade dynamic is going to be, once we can get to that steady state, then businesses can adjust and the inflationary impact can fade into the background. The longer there's back and forth on the trade front, just like the longer there's back and forth in the conflict of Iran, the imprint in inflation ends up being extended and delayed. And so that's another factor to pay close attention to.
Uncertainty is death for business because you can't adjust your plans. And what we've had over the last year and a half with this president is day after day of uncertainty. There is no coherent national economic policy. Is President Trump pro-tariff or anti-tariff? I don't know, man. Like, the tariffs are here today. Then we get a deal. Then it's over. Now we're mad at the Prime Minister of Canada, so now we're going to stick it to him. And it's the stupidest economic policy imaginable. And every other business leader is trying to figure out, well, do I raise my prices? Do I not? Am I going to get, then I'm going to get this money back. Like, what do we do? President's defenders said this is the art of the deal. I think the deal kind of sucks. 651-461-9226. We'll share your thoughts on that when we come back. Lots of text coming in on the tariff conversation. My view is that we should knock it off with this tariff talk and using this as a threat and the up and down and yo-yo trade policy has been a disaster. And right now for Minnesotans, especially threatening Canada. I mean, we're getting it coming and going right now with the threats against Canada, which is a major trade partner with the state of Minnesota. But then on top of it, flooding the market with cheap beef from overseas. Like, what are we doing? Right. Like, make sense of this for me. Beef prices are too high. And so the answer is to bring cheap foreign beef into America to screw over American beef ranchers. But when it comes to Canada, we're going to stick them with high tariffs to protect American jobs in that scenario. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. The other issue, and you look at the automaker industry, right? The automotive industry, and there are a number of vehicles. And this is why, like, I'm not opposed to tariffs to protect the automotive industry in this country. It's these general tariffs that make no sense to me. Just saying, like, oh, we're going to even things up with Canada. And a texter points up, look, Canada had huge tariffs on us before Trump came along. And I do think, like, look, I get this, right? If Canada has a... Let's just make up a number. Canada has a 30% tariff on American maple syrup to protect their syrup industry. Should we, in turn, have a 30% tariff on them? It makes sense, right? Yeah. You're like, well, we want to be fair, so let's just have it fair. But the truth is much more complicated. That if you just have what's called reciprocal trade policy, if you just have it evened up, which, again, seems fair. You're like, well, they tariff off. Remember Trump held up that chart showing all the, yes, here's what. And it makes sense. Like, dumb guy logic, it makes sense. And I'm kind of a dumb guy. And I was like, well, that makes sense, right? If they're going to stick us with a 40% tariff, why are we only sticking them with a 10% tariff?
My only question is, how much does supply and demand play into that when it comes to a Canada thing or a huge U.S. thing?
Yeah. You have asked the smart guy question. Because the dumb guy reaction, again, I was the dumb guy on this until I became a little more educated.
Yeah.
The dumb guy reaction is, we want it to be fair. Mm-hmm. The smart question is, what is the supply and demand situation?
Yeah.
How important is it to us as a country to protect this particular industry in America? If you look at the overall ebb and flow of trade, is it smart to let Canadian steel come in at a, you know, maybe an advantage to Canada? With the trade-off being that we're sending way more stuff to them. So in the aggregate, we're doing better. We're growing American industry. That it's going fine.
What I'm also not getting is, why is there certain things like hockey sticks right now? Yeah. And you have the bigger, you know, steel and everything coming up on, I think, January 1 is the date. I guess I'm not really understanding what's now and what's what. What is the difference between what they're doing immediately or and what they're doing on Jan 1?
This is not a grown-up trade policy. This is a big stick to threaten Canada to give in to what we want. And so the reason you hold out until January on the more serious stuff, at least in the overall scheme of the economy, is because you don't really want to do that. And that's why I say it's not a real policy. You could make a case, where, you know, we need to grow American jobs. And I do think we've been too free in sending American jobs to Canada and Mexico when it comes to the automotive industry.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think we sold out our American workforce. And so I don't disagree with strategically trying to rescue that. That said, I do think you have to be logical and say, you're not going to start making cell phones in America. You're just not. Yeah. There are lots of industries where, like, this doesn't make sense. And when you look at the global market, all right, we're going to tariff the crap out of Canadian steel. Well, who does that really help?
Yeah.
Because Canada is going to sell that steel to the Japanese. Mm-hmm. We're going to put it in Japanese cars. Japan's going to sell those cars to the United States. And who won in that deal? Did we protect any American jobs, or did we just help the Japanese automakers? Yeah. We did.
Yep.
So the whole thing is a bit of a mess for me. As corn and soybean farmers, says a texter, we cannot understand why any farmer would vote for Trump after his first term, where tariffs with long-fought-for trading partners flatlined our markets. Our markets never fully rebounded. Though they did better under Biden, now it's much worse. Inputs, fuels, drying, the deep, depressed markets and sketchy production reports. It's interesting. Texter says tariffs can make good sense if they're very selective and strategic. That's my point. I'm not in favor of overall tariffs. Protecting industries that are mission critical for the country to survive on its own makes sense. However, putting tariffs on balloons, socks, hockey sticks, things that are not strategic, don't make sense. I think that's right. That's right. Let's break. In a minute, I want phones equal China. You must like forced child labor. Look, if you guys want to bring every industry back to America, you have to consider that you're going to pay more for this. And how does that hurt the economy in other ways? It is true. Like, are you comfortable buying clothing from questionable sources? Yeah, I mean, these things are complicated, right? Like, everybody to make their point wants to go to, like, the most dramatic rhetorical scenario you can. Yeah, actually, what we've learned today is DeRusha's in favor of racism and child labor. What will I have to say next? Wait,
we got two more hours. Let's unpack it all, baby.
I'm just getting rolling
on
this Monday. In a minute, I want to talk about a story that absolutely gutted me this weekend. This weekend, there's going to be a lot of talk about what happened at Annunciation Church and School 1 year ago. For any parent who's lost a child, the question of what to do with their room is a tough one. CBS News takes us to Fletcher's room. We'll talk about that when we come back. E-Service bringing us the weather forecast. I got to give them a call. I got some trees that are just out of control. Tonight, mostly cloudy, isolated showers near the morning. Although I was driving down to Edina this afternoon and got a little bit of a sprinkle out there. Low is 66. It's humid. It feels like it. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, isolated afternoon showers. High of 84. Wednesday looks good. 80. Is the high. Start of the fair looks real nice. 80 degrees, not humid. We'll be live out at the fairgrounds on Thursday here on News Talk 830 WCCO. August 27th. That is how the Annunciation school family talks about that day. Sometimes I worry that the news cycle, which is so chaotic and so crazy and so many things have happened over this last year, that we forget. That we forget that we just moved on. But these families haven't moved on. Two children killed, countless others injured, physically and emotionally. And I always think about how families who went through something like this are able to move forward. I don't like to say move on because you never move on, but you do have to move forward. You have to keep one foot in front of the other. And often for a lot of these families, there are other children. You have other kids. You can't be constantly sad because you have other children who need you. And you, your partner, you need each other. And there was some incredible storytelling in the Star Tribune on their website this weekend where video diaries from a number of these families, including a teacher, just gutting, heartbreaking, incredible stuff. And I was watching CBS Sunday morning, and Steve Hartman has done this project about the bedrooms, the empty rooms, where you have a child that left that room thinking he or she were going to come home, right? Not even thinking about it. They just left the room first day of school. It's Wednesday, going off to Annunciation. We got Mass. We got whatever. That's what it is. Fletcher Merkel, 8 years old. His parents left the room frozen in time and invited CBS News' Steve Hartman, who won an Academy Award for his documenting of these empty rooms. All the Empty Rooms was the name of the documentary, eight of them in this Netflix series. But Steve has decided that any parent of a kid who died in a school shooting who wants to share their child's room, that he will come and visit.
He's not with us the way we want him to be, but this is the best we have.
The room they save belonged to Fletcher Merkel, Jesse and Molly's 8-year-old son.
Why not pack up the room? Why keep it like it is?
It's one of the most personal monuments to who he was as a person.
If the room's not his, I feel like that memory, like I won't feel it the same way.
I want people to maybe have a tiny glimpse of, like, what if that was me?
And it's really important to me that people learn about him and know who he was.
I wouldn't be able to touch that room. I wouldn't be able to touch it. Would you be able to touch that room of your kid? I don't know. I had heard over the last year that one of the families was selling their house. And you sort of have that debate as a buyer, right? Would it feel weird moving your own kid knowing that another child never left that room and never came home? I don't know. It's tough. The emotions around it are tough. For me, I don't think I would be able to touch that room. I don't know if I'd be able to come back to the house. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's so difficult, but it was so powerful for Fletcher's parents to open that room because I think the point that Jesse made is that by opening the room, maybe you take a moment and feel what it would be like if it was your kid. And it's the little things that just break your heart, right? Like the Legos or he was a Green Bay Packers fan. The little journal.
Mm-hmm.
There is a moment in the story where in the journal he had plotted out his plan to steal cookies from the cookie jar downstairs. And at the bottom it says the plan was successful.
And the shoes that he just bought just, I think, a few weeks prior to the shooting.
Yeah, UGEL says I couldn't do it. I couldn't clean. I couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It is hard, right, when you think about that scenario of what do you do? I do think this week, and we'll spend more time talking about this, I do think we have to sit with and analyze whether we've let these families down. Whether by moving on, did we leave them down, let them down? By not really changing any laws. We haven't really done a dang thing. And I get it. Like, you don't want to make decisions and make policy just out of emotion. But I think sometimes maybe we've stripped too much emotion out of it. Mm-hmm. The urgency. What happened to Why do, and is it our fault? Is it partially our fault in the media that we move on to the next shiny object? Maybe. I think it's a question that every legislator should be asked on the campaign trail and everybody running for governor, too. Did you let them down? I think it's an important question to struggle with. Continental Diamond, time check, 3:58. Got to hang on to those memories, those amazing moments that life brings you, right? Continental Diamond, proud to be a part of those moments, too. We're going to come back after local news. Our friend Kate Raddatz is going to join us. Best part of the summer, State Fair must-haves, and where are you on sweet corn? Because I still have some in my teeth from last night's dinner. Drive Time, it's Monday. Thanks for hanging with us on CCA. Hour two, Drive Time with DeRusha on this Monday. I have heard some sweet corn hatred out there. I thought sweet corn was universally loved.
But I love it.
There are haters. There are haters. Let's get Kate Raddatz's take on her monthly visit here, the Rad Report. Kate is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Kate, that song just, it always cracks me up. I don't know why I'm so amused by it, but
it's really a gem. It is.
Does your husband like play that when you walk in the room? Have you sent him an MP3 of that yet?
He doesn't, but now that you mention it, I feel like I should request that anytime that I that I come into the house. And he would not be fazed in the least if that's what I asked for.
Yeah, I mean, you deserve that. All right, sweet corn.
Like, sure.
I had sweet corn last night, and Alyssa and I were at the Coburn's picking out the sweet corn, which, by the way, so I'm at the grocery store yesterday, and you know how everybody wants you to use their rewards thing? You got to punch in.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
How many rewards memberships do you think you have?
Oh, I'm super strict. I have one, probably.
Just one? Do you you only go to one store? Or you're just that protective of your information?
I just don't need, I'm super loyal to only use, like, I just don't need something else I need to keep track of. I can only think of one place that I actually have a punch card and I use rewards at.
Wow. Yeah, like every store, like Cub wants you to punch in the thing for like the gas. You get like a gas discount.
John has a bunch. He's got a bunch. I know. Yes, he's at Cub. He's at the gas station.
Lunds and Byerly's. I got one at Cub. I got one at Lunds. So I was trying to get one at Coburn's, and I so I tell them my number, and they're like, it's not in here. I'm like, well, I signed up. What do you mean it's not in
here?
And then she's like, well, go to the customer service desk. So I go to the desk, and they're like, they gave me like an 800 number to call. I'm like, I'm not calling.
You're so patient. I would have been out of there.
I tried to save $3.50 on what I bought. Like, it really wasn't that significant. So it got to the point. And then I looked at my application. You know why my number wasn't in there? Because I typed it in wrong when I signed up. So I screwed up the whole thing. It was totally my fault.
Sad day.
I know. I was just
trying to reapply. Your email's already taken.
Well, right now
it's gonna be a big problem.
Yes, exactly.
Create a new email.
And the corn, it was 10 cents for an ear of corn. So we were buying food for dinner last night, and I'm like, well, we should get corn. And Alyssa was like, I don't really love sweet corn.
Oh,
I know. I was surprised.
I love sweet corn. Yeah, we had it this weekend too, oddly. So
how do you cook it? Because I'm always I'm never quite certain what is the right way to cook.
Well, again, not the right person to ask, because since the invention of the air fryer, I make everything in the air fryer.
You're making like a ear of sweet corn? You throw that thing in the air fryer?
Oh, you can make pretty much
no
everything.
No way. Really?
Yes. Huh? I make steak in the air fryer. Again, it's quick. It's super easy.
Air fryer steak sounds terrible. Is that good?
Oh, no. It's super good if you get the hang of it. It gets it really crispy on the outside and then perfect on the end. Yeah. You gotta get the hang of it. I love my air fryer.
What is the weirdest thing you guys put in the air fryer? 651-461-9226. I did a pork chop in the air fryer. It was very good. I'm pro air fryer, but like I wouldn't have thought to put the sweet corn in there.
I know. It takes so that's the thing. It takes away a little bit of the joy. I would say usually we like to grill.
I grilled it. That's what I did.
It does taste better doing it. Like a little foil. I feel like that's how it tastes the best.
Like I just put, like some people leave the husk on when they cook. I just put it.
Oh.
So like I took the husk because then it sort of steams, I think. I don't know. I just put raw dog corn cob right on the grill. I don't know. And then it got bright yellow and a little, it was delicious.
I love it. I mean, I grew up eating, my grandparents were, you know, farmers and they always had corn. So we love corn in my family. My kids love it. So
it was interesting. Like, you know, I feel like corn gets sort of a bad rap, right? Like we all like this sort of shorthand when it comes to diet and what's healthy and what isn't healthy. And there is a story in the New York Times today that asked the question, how healthy is sweet corn? I thought it was pretty interesting because, you know, there was this stretch where sweet corn, they're like, well, it's not really a vegetable. It's a carb.
Sure.
But University of Michigan associate professor of nutritional sciences said that sweet yellow corn is very different from like all the other kind of processed corn stuff. And this professor said it's pretty healthy. Corn is pretty healthy. It promotes digestion. It's a good source of energy. It's got a bunch of different vitamins and minerals. And it made me feel a little better about it. They were like, it's not the enemy that people think it is.
When I think about comparatively, what else could I put on their plates? I'm like, it doesn't seem that bad. It's got fiber. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fresh. So like, I feel
obviously
okay about
like,
it.
You know, leafy greens, like a big bowl full of kale.
Sure.
Is better than corn. But corn is obviously better than, you know, some of the other stuff. Texts are flying.
Say a pasta as a side.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
People are flying in. With the text. They're blowing up here. So one texter says, leave it in the husk, microwave it, and then all of the hairs come right off. Just like
I've done that too.
Four minutes. Another texter says 4 minutes in the microwave and husk. Cut the end off and squeeze it out. Cut the end off and squeeze it out. By the way, great advice for a lot of different scenarios. Like very sound. Ever a lot texture swearing by the microwave. The secret of cooking sweet corn is to buy the very best sweet corn, says the texture. If you got great corn, you can cook it anyway, and it's great. If you've got junk, it's junk. That's probably true. Boil water with salt or sugar. Throw in the corn for 8 minutes. Some people boil milk and throw cobs in. Really?
Huh. Have not done that.
Now, do you get the sweet corn at the state fair?
Have I before? Yes.
But it's not like a go-to for you.
No, but, I mean, don't get me wrong. It is very good at the state fair. But because we do eat it pretty regularly in the summer, it's not something I'm, like, dying to have. Whereas other things I never eat at home, and I'm more likely to buy those.
So I was like you. I was sort of out on the sweet corn at the fair, and I don't know, about 3 years ago, I was like, you know, I should really get the corn. I don't know why I always am so hesitant to get the corn. I'm a convert. It is so good.
Wow.
And I think it's because they harvest that stuff like the morning they serve it, like they're loading it in at the fair that day, and it's so fresh. That like none of the sugars have broken down, so it's so sweet. It's
so
very good. And anything that you dip in a bucket of butter, wonderful.
It's probably gonna taste pretty good.
Wonderful. It is that.
Yes.
Now you can buy this stuff too, but this week was the best sweet corn I've had so far. A lot of like the truth is most of what the grocery stores have up until this month. It's not Minnesota corn yet. It's sort of, you know, and so it's more white looking. It's not as It just doesn't taste sweet. It kind of tastes like, bleh, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and a texter says, I feel like all the corn I've had this summer has been overrated because there hasn't been any with flavor. It is disappointing when you get, when you go to the trouble, right? Because sweet corn, you sort of have to earn it. You got to strip off the husk. You got to peel all those little hairy things that you got to take them off. It's a bit of work.
It's a legit cooking item. I feel like I've actually cooked if we're having real, not in a bag, like frozen out of the front, which I have done as well.
Yeah.
In the frozen aisle corn.
Nothing wrong with frozen. I think frozen vegetables get a bad rap.
Oh, I've got no problem with frozen. My kids have eaten plenty of frozen vegetables.
Absolutely.
It's better than potentially some other alternatives than that I could be making.
Exactly.
So.
All right. I want to ask Kate about the best part of her summer. So we're going to talk about that. And I know it's back to school season for you, too. So we'll check it. I'm thinking about all you parents. I'm out of this mess now. I'm just worried about whatever fraternity party and recruitment effort my USC kid is engaged in. Kate Raddatz, the Rab Report. We'll continue with that in just a minute. Little My Chemical Romance. They are at Target Field tonight. Big concert weekend at Target Field. It was Tim McGraw and the Chicks. Was that last night or was that Saturday?
Tim McGraw, the Chicks, and Lady A last night.
Last night.
Are you more My Chemical Romance or more Tim McGraw, Kate?
Well, I love the Chicks. Never not call them the Dixie Chicks.
I know. It is weird. It is weird.
It's so hard. My first concert was seeing them at Lilith Fair, I think it was called.
Lilith Fair, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All of those artists, that was my wheelhouse. Chick music. Yes. That's what I wanted the Indigo Girls. I wanted Natalie Merchant. That was what I was listening to.
I love it.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
Are you surprised? Is anyone surprised that that was?
No. No one's going to correct you.
Fine.
It's still great music. It looked like a great show.
Yes, it did look good. Although I heard that, these shows are long, right? Which I guess part of it is because they're so expensive. Although I think I saw Tim McGraw tickets going for $100 or something. Not bad. But 6-hour show, all those openers. It's a lot of show, you know.
It's so long. And I don't like being out past 10.
I know.
So
you're an
pretty. Concerts are rough. It's really rough.
Summer. I don't like looking at the State Fair as marking the end of summer. But I feel like most people sort of see Labor Day as that's it.
Yeah, it feels over to me. It feels pretty over.
Is it because you're in the throes of it? Like it's who's going back to school? You have one kid going back to school?
Well, my second child is starting kindergarten.
Oh.
So, yes. So which is so much easier than the first starting. It is a little easier. So we have two going back to school and once we, meet the teachers and you're in the school, I'm like, "Okay, let's get this show on the road, like I'm ready to go, like let's send them back."
You've done the open house. It's like, can we just start? It does feel super late. It feels so late this year, doesn't it?
It is very weird, and especially with how late the fair feels like it starts. Yes. Well, it is starting late.
I think it's the latest, I am very confused.
It's
the latest it can be, right? Because Labor Day this year falls on the 7th. Does it get later?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so.
That have always started after Labor Day are starting before Labor Day this year because of how late it is.
Yeah, the whole school start date thing always kind of cracks me up because no matter when you start, like the last 3 weeks of the school year are going to be nonsense. So who really cares?
Bananas,
right?
Yes.
Like, what's the difference when it starts? I don't know. It feels like a lot of hubbub, a lot of hullabaloo over nothing to me.
I don't know. I would not want to be a teacher in those final weeks because kids are just so done,
crazy.
You know?
Yeah. But the only solution to that is year-round school, right? Like, because otherwise you're going to have, no matter when you start, no matter when you finish, it's always going to be sort of like that at the end.
Yes. Other countries do it. And they get periodic breaks throughout the year.
Yeah.
We do not.
Yeah, I think it sometimes, like, just this is the way we've always done it. It's maybe all right. Like, we're doing fine. Americans are fine. Like, we don't need to. Do we need to change the whole system and do it? I don't know. I you know, easy for me to say. I got college kids now. It's not my problem.
Yeah, you're done. You're done with caring about. You're like, right. Well, whatever you
want
to do.
Whatever you guys want. It doesn't upset me either way. Was this a good summer for you?
Oh yeah. I mean, I love summer. Summer is when I thrive. I do get very sad when summer's over. So yeah, it's just a totally different life. Slows down and our family schedule is slower. We spend more time together and I know winter is coming. So yeah. I love summer. It was great.
So yeah. You said that you feel that dread. I saw a news story the other day that felt like a classic TV news story. And I was curious, is this a real thing? Or is this a TV news thing? The August scaries.
Ooh.
It's like the Sunday scaries, which when I was growing up, we just called that Sunday. It didn't need like a fancy name, but like, you know, you're nervous about going back to school or whatever. I used to get a Sunday stomach ache, which was not real. It was fake. It was...
Oh.
Because I was a perfectionist at school, and so the Sunday night, I didn't get therapy. Maybe I should have. I just sucked it up, Kate. Toughed it out. That's what we did back in our day. Now we have August scaries for people who are worried about transitioning from the summer to the fall.
Yes. I would say I was wildly unprepared my first time, so last summer, of having a child then going to the next school year, that I would feel anything with summer ending. Because I like them going back to school. It's just the whole family calendar transition, the getting back to days being rushed. And yeah, it's a major transition for me.
Yeah.
Like this whole last week, I've treated it as a school week just to mentally prepare and not, you know, not have the first day be so
chaotic.
Different.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do have a hard time with it.
Now
yeah.
You have a name for it. You can say you've got the August scary.
I'm not doing that.
I feel like you would be mocked by your parents, by your
That's
husband.
Correct.
Like it would be you could try it out. You know, try it out tonight, see how it
goes. Sure. I'd feel a little bad for my child who actually needs to get ready to go back to school.
Right. Yeah. You're not allowed to to have that. It is.
That's right.
A texture says August is the Sunday of months. Yeah, I do remember. Well, let's be honest here. I could pretend that I remember all the chaos of August, but my wife took care of everything. Let's just be real. Like, I'm a useless father. I'm a useless individual. It's fine. It is what it was. And I'm aware of it. I name it. I try to be better now. But I wasn't that helpful.
Well, it's good. That's good that you can. Trying to be better is always good for everybody.
Don't tell Alyssa that I acknowledged it, though.
Texting her already.
Kate Raddatz, very good. Good luck with the back to school. And we appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Of course.
There she goes, Kate Raddatz. She is a big shot with McClung Public Relations, McClung PR. She's the Vice President of Media Relations at McClung PR. So if you really screw something up and you need somebody to spit shine your image right up, Kate will hook you up. Let's break. In a minute, I want to talk about the Target boycott, another one from teachers. The last time I talked about the Target boycott on this radio station, I went viral. Not in a way that I think many would say is friendly to me. So you definitely are going to want to hear what I have to say about this Target boycott. We'll do that when we come back. Teachers Union wants all of you to shop for school supplies anywhere but Target. And the reason for this boycott is the dumbest reason of any of the boycotts so far. The teachers union is upset not for what Target did. They are upset for what Target did not do. Target didn't speak up against ICE and the nation's largest teachers union has determined that that is so egregious that they should use their considerable power to urge everybody to boycott Target. When are we going to realize that companies are not going to save you? Companies are not going to save whatever your issue may be. No matter how righteous or how right you are, if you are looking for corporate America to come to your rescue, you are looking in the wrong place. And this obsession with Target is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And it's embarrassing to me for the teachers union. Here is Randy Weingarten talking about the campaign that the teachers union has initiated to shop anywhere other than Target.
Target's corporate headquarters are in Minneapolis, where ICE's cruel and illegal immigration tactics have left vulnerable communities, including countless children, in a permanent state of fear. Target could have used its considerable clout to demand an end to these inhumane tactics, but it has remained silent as ICE's terror and
oh no, they were silent. There's no greater sin in today's world of performative corporate justice. This is so stupid. It is so stupid. And it goes to this overall idea. Look, if you as an individual shopper believe that Target should have done more and you personally want to shop elsewhere, I honor that. I have no problem with that. Individually, everybody can make decisions on how to shop however they want to do it. I have spoken out against the ongoing boycott against Target because I believe that people have decided Target is supposed to be the social justice warrior of America. And if Target doesn't do whatever the issue of the day is, some goof is going to freak out and be like, now we're all boycotting. Mm. Now we're boycotting even more. We're like triple D boycott. Stupid. My issue with the ongoing boycott over Target was that it has become a part of political identity and no longer linked to any sort of specific goal. The initial boycott against Target, I believe, was incredibly effective. And it was way more effective than I thought it was going to be, and I was wrong. It was incredibly effective. Why? Because it told a narrow story, and the story was Target is rolling back all of their efforts to support diversity and equity. Now, we could have an argument as to whether or not that's a fair accusation, but it's a very effective story. It, in fact, I don't know that it directly led to a new CEO, but there's a new CEO.
Yeah.
There's less conversation about like, oh, Target is screwing black people and gay people. There seems to be less public conversation on that. And in fact, at a national level, the national people who were pushing this boycott said they were done. The local people, we had them on the show. Like, I'm not opposed to having viewpoints different than mine. The local people came on the show and said, well, we don't care what the national people say. We're continuing our boycott. Fine. Mm-hmm. Well, then ICE gets added in. Now we're mad about ICE. So first we're mad about diversity. Then we're mad that the allegation was that they were cooperating with ICE or letting ICE agents stage in their parking lots. Target has said they have no cooperative agreement with ICE.
Yeah.
And generally, Target doesn't own their parking lots anyway. They're renters, and so they may or may not have a voice in that scenario, but they can't exactly evict law enforcement from staging. Anyway, now we're not even mad at that. Now we're mad that they were silent. It's this absurd, like, silence is complicity. And I just, that is so...
It's a tiring narrative. It's exhausting.
I just think it's also an abuse of the power of the teachers union.
Yeah. There's other things you could be shifting your focus on than this. But.
Lots of text. 651-461-9226. I want to know where you're at on this. I think it... Now, again, if as a teachers union, you were saying, we think you should shop at union.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in a union. All things being equal, I would personally prefer, like when it comes to grocery shopping, I prefer to shop at union employee grocery stores. I do. I do shop in other places, but like to me, you know, I'm not one that you got to check off the list of here's how I feel about issues or here's how you should donate. That's just not me. If that's how you want to live your life, I think you live your life however you want. But I do think for the teachers union, I tell you, like, maybe this is how teachers want their dues used for this sort of political advocacy. But to me, like, what does this have to do with improving your life as a teacher? You can make the long tail that, like, well, the way ICE was interfacing with schools and near school. Okay, but, like, it's a bit of a stretch to me.
I think this is a reach. I'm still trying to connect dot A to dot B when it comes to the teachers union and Target, because I feel like they're just looking for a cloud to yell at, to shake their fist at and yell at, and I don't understand it. As a former Target employee, I think it's pretty black and white as far as what they told us when this was starting to happen was basically, we can't help you. And yeah, it's a tough thing to hear, but it's also, that's just the facts of life, baby.
Yeah.
That's just how it works.
Are we addicted to boycotts or what? Says one texter. I do think there is a certain amount of that. Good thing everything is going so well in our education system that the teachers can focus on ICE and Target. Another texter, I hate ICE. I don't shop at Target very often, but now I can. Now I might. Totally agree, Jason. The Target boycott is stupid. Another texter says, I will be joining the Target boycott. You ask, when are people going to realize that companies aren't going to save them? The question you need to ask instead is, when are companies going to realize they can't harvest all the demographic information about their customers and market to directly, I don't know, we're getting a little texter. We were already tricked that the tech billionaires were supposed to be our social justice warriors. Another texter, Target's a Minnesota company. You would have thought they would have spoken out against ICE. Many companies did. Target wants to be a part of the community, but isn't putting that forth when the rubber meets the road. Let me ask you this. What are the Minnesota companies that really aggressively spoke out against ICE?
Yeah.
Because the answer is none.
Yeah.
None of them.
Correct.
And they did speak out at a certain point where the business community came forward and said, look, this ongoing surge of ICE agents is bad for business, and we need to work it out. And I and many others thought that was a pretty tepid statement. And you also can acknowledge it was a statement, right?
Yeah.
Jason, why isn't the anger directed at Trump and the politicians? Trump skates and Target is the bad guy? I don't know. I think the teachers unions are pretty obvious, are pretty yeah. pretty anti-Donald Trump. Yeah. Like, I don't know that that's fair. I have to admit, it was pretty brutal to watch masked agents forcing two young workers to the ground at the Richfield Target and take them away. Both workers were later confirmed to be U.S. citizens. So all I'll say about that is we don't really know what happened prior to that video recording. So we don't know what the full interaction was there. I agree it was tough to watch. But do I blame Target for that? Like, Target should have done something? I don't know. I don't. Texters, Target is a statewide store. Liberals in the metro area need to understand that we live in rural Minnesota and do not see life as you see it. I was a 35-year teacher. I usually voted Republican. to me, I just, this idea that we're going to boycott and organize a boycott and use the power of our union to urge a boycott. I mean, are you really prepared to extend that logic to every, like, well, this store didn't speak out about this? I just think this idea that you expect a corporation to do the work, if you really believe in these issues, go elect politicians who are aligned with you.
Yeah.
This idea, I also think we've accepted this idea that it's okay to economically punish the tens of thousands of people who work for Target in Minnesota because what? Because Target didn't speak out on ICE? Give me a break. Yeah. Give me a break. Drive time back in just a minute. We'll be shopping at Target tomorrow. Another BS boycott. Tell teachers to stick with teaching. I don't know. Like, unions are allowed to speak about what they want, but another texter says, if I were Target, I would consider moving headquarters. I think that's too extreme, but I do think Minnesota could stop just constantly beating on them. You got to weigh, like, is the benefit of having them here worth whatever your other grievances are? Not to downplay them, but be real. Continental Diamond Time Check. It's 4:57. News is straight ahead. I mean, I don't know about saying Target is racist because of that costume, which I looked up online. Shaletta, you know, she has a right to her view, for sure. I'm glad they pulled the costume, I'll tell you that much. Welcome to Drive Time. Good to be with you. Hour three. I want to ask you guys about the state fair and politics. Because when I go to the state fair, I 0% want to meet or talk to any politicians. But it's election season. They're going to be all over the place. Are you looking forward to meeting any particular politicians at the fair? Are you looking forward to hearing from someone? Do you have questions you want to ask? 651-461-9226. If it were up to me in an election year, I'd tell them all to stay home. Come and have fun, but I don't need your booths. I don't need your walls lied booth. I don't need your, what are those guys going to do, by the way?
Yeah.
Are they going to change their shtick to something else?
It'll be fraud related or something.
Spin the wheel, like they had all of that.
Telling us things that we know all about and we get it. Yeah.
I'm just curious if, because I'm of mixed feeling on this, which is why I really want to hear from you guys at 651-461-9226. Sometimes I have my opinion. I want to convince you guys that I'm right. In this scenario, I really want to know where you're at on this, because on the one hand, what an opportunity to go to the state fair. You may be able to run into Lisa Daymuth. You may be able to run into Amy Klobuchar and Michelle Tafoya and Peggy Flanagan. And then some of the down ballot races, mm-hmm. like the attorney general candidates. I know a lot of you are pretty geeked up about seeing the auditor candidate. Oh, do I love like a state elected official? Like, who's going to take Julie Blah's job? I can't wait. Maybe that's your kink. It's none of my business. And then also, like, I just want to eat my dang Pronto Pup and my footlong hot dog and my fresh French fries and just have some peace. Have a moment. Like, part of what I love about the state fair is you have city and rural, black and white, rich and poor, and everybody's the same. You all wait in the same dang line. You're all the same people. Like, I love that. And when you introduce the political side of things, it's just a division that I feel like is not really necessary. Now, a texter says, I avoid the WCCO booth because it's next door to the state GOP. We like our neighbors. Now, sometimes over at the state GOP booth, they just rip on me for great. You know what I say? Thanks for listening. I'm glad. You know, it's all right.
Yeah. It's okay to disagree.
I do not want to see any of them, says Jeff in St. Francis. None of them represent me or most of Minnesota, I know they all represent the far left or the far right. If I ask what they're going to do for us in the middle, they simply lie and tell a bunch of BS. I do think a lot of people feel like Jeff, right? Where the politics are not, they're not aimed for you if you're somebody that's in the middle.
Yeah.
Every year I go to the booths and get the buttons, says a texter. Don't really care if I see the candidate. It's a bonus, not a must. Now, I think that's interesting because, look, we are a little spoiled in this job in that we get to meet some of these candidates. We get to interview them. And for the average Minnesotan, have you ever met a governor, a sitting governor, or a lieutenant governor, or a senator? I don't know. So on that side, like, it might be cool, right? Another texter, my main goal is to stay as far away as possible from every Democratic candidate. I mean, obviously, like, the hardcore Republicans and the hardcore Democrats, like, you don't want to see any. But if you are a hardcore Republican, wouldn't you like to ask Amy Klobuchar a question?
Yeah.
I mean, there is some of the fact that, like, and that's the thing. Like, do you want to have a policy conversation at the corner of Carnes and Nelson? Like, there's something weird about that also.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like you should be keeping it light. You know what I mean? There's just something strange to me about this juxtaposition.
Sorry, Amy. Can you please set down your peaches donuts? I need to ask you about the war in Iran real quick. Like, just it's a lot of weird.
It's a little strange.
Weird vibe.
It's a little strange, right?
Yeah.
But I do think this is why I'm so undecided on this, because there's a combo platter of the fact that most of us don't get the chance to meet these folks. And so I think it would be cool. I think it would be cool. 651-461-9226. Jonathan says, I might lose my appetite if I see a politician. Jonathan says, sort of what I'm thinking, like, I would rather never see a politician at the state fair again. Now, the flip side to that is, like, if you had someone running for governor and they didn't go to the state fair, wouldn't you be suspicious of them? Like, would that be disqualifying for somebody running for governor of Minnesota?
Like, when we had Walz a couple of years ago with the VP situation, was there any speculation that he might not show up?
Mm.
Because I know there was we were on Walz watch.
Yeah, there
for a while
there was.
The yeah.
There was some thought that maybe he wouldn't be there because he was, you know, you
the
don't
big stage.
When you don't need to campaign in Minnesota.
Yeah. Obviously, it's different than gubernatorial, but yeah.
Yeah.
Last year, we had a plethora of people. We had Qualls, Damath, a bunch of people on one of the Sundays with Blois, just on our stage. So they do pop out from time to time.
Now, some texters are wanting to meet the losing candidates. And now that would be more fun. If you could meet, yeah. Texter says, I would love to meet Mike Lindell. And again, I hate to be so definitive, because I know Mike thinks that he won and got screwed out of 40,000 votes.
There's a booth for that. There will be a booth at the fair.
Another texter wants more Jason DeRussia, Adam Schwarzy. That interview dynamic was so good. Yeah.
Check out the CCO radio stage. It might happen.
A texter says, I would love to run into the governor candidates and ask them this question calmly. We have a law in our state that allows women to choose to abort their child all the way up to the moment of birth. Do you believe that is a moral law in the state of Minnesota? So if abortion is your issue, that would be a great opportunity to ask that question. I will say, like, not that I want to get into a debate on this, but I personally believe that abortion law in Minnesota should have, it should be more explicit with an end point. But I'll also point out that this scenario that's being laid out is not happening.
Yeah.
So it is valid to say, well, if it's not happening, why not just, like, adjust the law And I think the idea is to let doctors make decisions, not to have the law. And I think common sense, putting, you know, figuring out where that line is might be difficult, but for sure you could draw that line at a certain point, yeah, say, and take that issue off the table. Jason, since Republicans are running some more normal candidates this time, it might be fun to ask them a few questions to see if I can become a Republican again, says Todd. Yeah, I think, I mean, we heard Tim Pawlenty on with Chad earlier today saying that these are the best Republican candidates in more than two decades. And I totally agree.
Yeah.
But the question with both of these candidates is like, it's the same thing when Scott Jensen ran. At the time, he was a very well-respected, independent Republican legislator. Mm-hmm. But he ran far to the right. What's going to happen with Lisa Daymuth and Michelle Tafoya? We'll see.
There's also a lot of runway between now and November, too. There's,
yeah.
Yeah, the story is not over yet.
No. And then another texter says, isn't the point to have access to the candidates and have an opportunity to see them and talk to them? Mm-hmm. I think the question is, are you going to get that opportunity? Because we're in such a bubble wrap the candidate era.
Mm-hmm.
So do you get the opportunity? You know there are going to be cameras in their face all the time. That's just the world now. So will you get an opportunity to ask a question and have a conversation? I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. We had a debate on this show as to whether or not Dan and I were discussing, do we have politicians on? What if we just didn't have any candidates on and did our show without it? I don't know. I'll ask you guys. Should we interview politicians? 651-461-9226. Just from the fair. Obviously, we want to do it in the regular confines of our show. But should we interview Amy Klobuchar and Peggy Flanagan and Lisa Daymuth and Michelle Tafoya? What do you guys think? 651-461-9226. Drive Time back in just a minute. Most of you guys want us to interview politicians. We were discussing, like, is this a good point of differentiation for us, right? If we could advertise, like, hey, Minnesota State Fair, we're going to politician free.
Hmm.
Because are they going to, I don't know. The fair is an awkward spot. And, like, it's the only spot that Governor Tim Walz ever has done an interview with me. It was the last time we spoke on this show was at the fair when he was running for re-election almost 4 years ago now. It was my first summer.
Takes off his invisibility cloak, and there he is.
Yeah, I think, so from that perspective, you're like, well, we have access to these folks. And one texter said, well, didn't you already do it? Didn't you already talk to them? But you do want to. There are new questions that come up, new issues, etc. Texter says light is the best disinfectant. Journalists are the fourth check and balance in our democracy. Another says, I do say yes, interview them, but let them do it with a mouthful of cheese curds. Another texter says, in my opinion, access and information, never a bad thing. There is the flip side, though. Do not interview any candidates while you're at the fair. Interview the 4-H kids that made things. Interview the people that can their fruits and vegetables. I get that. Just interview normal people. We're going to do that, too. Like, we have the 4-H kids who take part in the llama costume contest will be joining us. Another texture. Why do politics have to infest every part of daily life? It's interesting. They say the major point of opinion at the state fair should be who builds the better tractor is John Deere. I know, like, some of you are cat fans. You're wrong.
Yeah.
And why does Dolores from Howard Lake always win the blueberry pie contest? I do understand that, too. Right. Yeah. Where it's like, I will say this. We do have access to these folks at the fair.
Yeah.
So Dan and I decided that we're not going to do a ton of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not doing auditor. We're not doing attorney general. We're not doing the U.S. rep races.
Mm-hmm.
But we will do the Senate candidates and we will do the governor candidates if we can get that. That's up to them if they want to schedule it or do it, right?
I also think security plays a lot into this, too.
Mm.
Not to tie
different
ends, but like ever since the Charlie Kirk thing, Donald Trump being attempting assassination, like
it's true.
Gets a little dicey even when you have tightened security at the fair.
Texter says, I like the idea of interviewing politicians at the fair, but challenge them to say something other than attacking the other side of the aisle. I think what I want to ask people, and you see what the news gives you that day, but I would like, now that we have the candidates, the opportunity to really focus in a little bit more on what are your plans for growth for Minnesota? How do we grow? That's what I would like to hear, because I think what we're seeing throughout the state is the result of everything costs more. So government, of course, costs more. Mm-hmm. But unless you grow, how do you pay for that?
Yeah.
And we're sort of, we're in a tough spot right now. Another texter says, see if you can get them to answer a question. Ha-ha. There is some fairness to that. Appreciate all the feedback. Just sort of helps me get where people are at on this. We're going to break. Dave Schwartz will join us in just a minute. The Minnesota Lynx playing tonight and a ruling from the WNBA as to whether a former male basketball standout could be eligible for the WNBA draft, a ruling from that league. And some thoughts on that when we come back. Dave is with us via video link up. If you're streaming our show on YouTube or Facebook at WCCO Radio, how's it going, Dave?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I am outstanding. Outstanding. We are about an hour away from Minnesota Lynx against Golden State at Target Center tonight. And I was wondering if wannabe WNBA rookie Royce White would be at the game tonight. But... you know, was he going to wear the wig and do the whole bit? Since Enes Kanter Freedom was kicked out of a WNBA game, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was yesterday.
I will say, like, I am sick of these goobers using the WNBA as just their sort of backdrop and their set for whatever political issue they want to make. I don't know what the WNBA – it's one thing if the players or the league wants to make their game the backdrop for their issues. But the fact that it's being used by so many losers who don't care about the league at all, who don't care about the game, who don't care about the players, is frustrating. It's frustrating for me.
And this is where we are in sports today, and it's – where we've gotten to a point where, ironically, our athletes, as good as better as they ever have been, they're incredible in all these sports. And oftentimes the actual product on the court is secondary to what goes on around it. Politics has become a really big part of sports, good or bad.
Yeah.
And it's happened. This is just the latest, Jason. It's happened in a lot of different sports. If you think back to, you know, kneeling for the national anthem or refusing to stand and so on and so forth.
But usually it's the players who start the conversation. It's the players who use their own league as their vehicle for getting out a message.
Yeah.
Here what's happening is it's all these other people who are basically using the WNBA as just like a punching bag for whatever their issue is.
And to me, the biggest issue is that we're not talking about how great the Lynx have been playing this year. We're not talking about Olivia Miles, who should be.
Well, we are, but yeah, for sure.
And we will, but the A1 topic is this.
That's fair.
And so this is what we end up spending our time on, is Enes Kanter and Royce White thinking and trying to challenge the WNBA and their ruling, which.
And today, you know, just today, for people who haven't heard, today. Late this afternoon, the WNBA deemed them ineligible for the 2027 WNBA draft, despite them claiming they were identified. I mean, obviously, the whole thing is a stunt. They're just trying to make a point. I'm 50-50 on whether we see Royce White in a wig at the game tonight.
What's really interesting here is that the collective bargaining agreement that the WNBA has says you must be a woman to play in the WNBA. To me, from a public relations standpoint, the easy out is that both of these guys at one point were in the NBA. You know, I mean, and you probably, you know, making that crossover is where it would be an easy place to draw the line.
Yeah.
But instead,
so you could get around it by just saying, like, oh, if you've ever played in the NBA, you're out.
Yeah, you could. I mean, if you've ever done that, then, you know, you can't play in the WNBA. But this is becoming a big issue.
Dave Schwartz with us. Obviously, the Lynx. I mean, what a run.
Yeah.
You look at this season and obviously, like, you know, you still got to produce in the playoffs and everybody's coming at you. As we know with the NBA, like, playoff basketball can be a different deal than regular season. But having a rookie be as dominant as Olivia Miles has been, what a thrill. Like, what a lucky thing to be able to witness.
It is really interesting because we don't often have the scenario where a rookie is making a genuinely strong case for MVP, not just rookie of the year. I mean, she'll run away with rookie of the year. Yeah. You could really make a good case that her, Asia Wilson, maybe Caitlin Clark are all have just as much of a chance to make become MVP. And this is a rookie who has dominated and continually played well against all of these players. And so it's a really fun thing to watch. It's been a really fun team to watch this year. And I just, what makes good teams great is that they have that other gear when you hit the postseason. And as good as the Lynx have been and they've been dominant, it still feels like there's some more here, whether that's because of the depth, but there's still more that they could go to. And thinking about that as the opposition, that's a little scary.
The Vikings had, I don't know, you never know what you can read into a preseason game other than they didn't look good. 13-3 was the final score against Baltimore. I, Dave, am embarrassed to admit that I probably watched 2.5 quarters of preseason Minnesota Vikings football on this weekend, which I feel like I'm a little embarrassed to admit it. What happened to me? Why did I have nothing better going on that I was just sucked in as a Vikings fan?
The number one reason to that I watch preseason football is
Ben Lieber. It's Ben Lieber.
Football.
He's so handsome.
Yes, and Ben Lieber, of course. I mean, he's devastatingly handsome.
It's disgusting. It's offensive.
But it's fantasy football because you got, you know, you get your number one and number two, but there's always a rookie. Like, I got to really hit on my RB5 at some point in the season. So I got to find him in a preseason, Broncos Seahawks game somewhere to try to get that guy.
Yeah.
So that's only reason preseason matters to me, other than at this point, just to see how much farther down this J.J. McCarthy train is going to spiral.
Well, he was banged up. He was banged up a little bit. He was 5 for 10. He did the J.J. thing. He threw one long pass that was enough to make you tingle. And you're like, oh, maybe he's got it. And then just seemed to struggle on some, like, run-of-the-mill type plays. What do you think happens to J.J.? I mean, he's got to be the number three guy, right?
I think he is. I just don't know because Kyler has had injury troubles, right? And there is probably over the last 3 years he's missed games each time. So there is going to be a point in this season, and I don't think it's an if, it's a when they're going to have to go to their second quarterback to win a game. And who do you want that to be at this point from what you've seen? Do you want it to be J.J. McCarthy, who throws one really good play but then misses a wide-open touchdown because he overthrows a guy? Or do you want Carson Wentz, who can efficiently run the offense, hit the guys that he needs to, and just play really well behind, what has been a really good offensive line? So, and I think the answer is pretty easy. It's Carson Wentz. Now, you still keep J.J. because – how many times in the past couple of years have the Vikings gone down to quarterback?
Yep.
You know, and
I mean,
so
what's the other option? Happen. Like, realistically, could they cut him? You could trade him.
I think they'd still have to be on the hook for his salary if they cut him. So I don't know that that's the right thing. And frankly, you can't trade him at this point. His trade value is so low. I don't even think you could get a bag of footballs back that are inflated for him at this point.
True.
There's nothing. But the interesting thing here, and I keep going back to this, is J.J. McCarthy was not the quarterback of this administration, right? Mm-hmm. This was Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's guy.
Yep.
He's the one that said, we got to make this. We got to get this guy, and he's shown it to us. So not only is he getting his lunch handed to him on the field, he probably doesn't feel a whole lot of acceptance and excitement around him when he comes off the field, because he was not the guy that they wanted. At least it doesn't seem like it. Not he was the guy that someone else wanted, I should say.
It's pretty interesting. And just the psychology of, like, you know, if he gets a shot, like, where's his head going to be? Like, you were the guy, and now you're the backup. Maybe you make him number two on the depth chart, but when push comes to shove, you bring in the other guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know in the NFL how that works. I don't think you have to bring in the two. You could always go to the three. But it is, I'll say this for J.J. McCarthy, and Sam Darnold is a great example of this. You can still have success in the NFL if you wash out somewhere. And J.J. McCarthy, it might just be a conversation of, listen, man, we do think that you got talent, but it's just not happening here in this city with this crew. You need to go somewhere else and get a fresh start. And maybe that's what happens, and he ends up being great. And then everyone in Minnesota will, jump off the roof because we should have had him.
Just another one of us who goes
another
on.
One of the guys we love.
Oh, we love that, don't we? We love
it. Yes, we do.
Yes, indeed. Stand by. Dave Schwartz with us. We got to talk Twins. Man, I don't know. This club. Oh, my goodness. The Twins. We'll talk about it with Dave in just a minute.
Is this for the end of the show, or is this for?
It might be for the end of the season. I
that's what I was.
Yeah,
I tried. Okay, it was a swing and a miss.
That's very good.
There you go. Josh, I think it was a home run.
Josh Wheeler filling in for Dan today. Very nice.
One of the few home runs you've hit, Wheeler. I got to be honest. I mean, you're usually a bunt single kind of guy. Yeah. I'm impressed.
There it is. Okay.
Thank you very much.
See, I mean, that's what you're talking about, the delay in getting to the rim shot.
Right, right.
The Twins were swept, then they sweep, then they were swept again. No offense, sort of starting pitching good, closing. Well, there's nothing to close when you lose 8-1. But the middle innings really have been a real issue in defense. There have been a lot of, like, sort of bobbles and it's been tough, Dave.
When you leave men on base, it is hard to win games.
Wow. And I mean, I'm going to write that down. That is good.
This year, I know. Yeah. I know. I'm a great great baseball manager here. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. But this is an issue. Now, it's not just this year. I feel like we talk about this every year. But it really has been an issue. And when you can't get the offense that you need, you know, like I think about the teams in – 2010, 2011, like they were manufacturing runs.
Yep.
They were getting on base, working their way around, and that's how they won games. They're just not getting that. They're not getting off the base path for whether it's because of a poor eye at the plate, poor hitting selection. It's just, but they cannot get these guys around.
I mean,
and that's the biggest issue.
Half of their runs, four of their eight runs were solo homers. I mean, it's just like, that is brutal. And then Buxton, since he's come back from injury, no rehab assignment, he just doesn't look like himself behind the plate, so he struggled. It's just been a tough go. The question is, I mean, when we started this stretch against the Padres, we were talking about the potential of winning the division. Now, after three losses, now the Twins are, I mean, they're not out of it because no one seems to be grabbing it in the American League, but they're 5.5 games behind the White Sox in the division. They're 2 games back in the, what, 6-team race for the final wild card.
Yeah.
So it's just,
only,
it gets tough.
5 weeks left of the season.
That's right.
It's just, they're not getting, you got to go on a streak at some point, and it's just not happening. I mean, that you can't. You said it. You can't sweep one series and then get run out of the park the next without any sort of improvement. And it just doesn't seem like they have the answers.
Kind of interest. It has been interesting, like looking at the Padres, another small market team that has had an owner that went all in and just spent a ton of money. And it was interesting reading, I think it was in The Athletic, where Tom Polab was saying, this is sort of what we have to do. Like he said that he's acknowledged, even the way he was talking about things at the beginning of his stint as the lead owner was wrong. That originally he thought you got to grow the business so you can support the team. And now he says, no, you got to do what the Padres did, which is spend up front and then the people will come.
I mean, that's it, right? The one thing that brings people into arenas, regardless of the sport, is the one thing you cannot control, and that is game outcome. However, you have got to win games and have exciting players who can provide things for you to get them in there. I'll tell you this. The one thing that really interests me in the last 5 weeks of the season is if we see Walker Jenkins, because he's absolutely crushing right now in St. Paul, and I want to see that guy play. That would get me to go to the ballpark right now for sure.
Dave, we're going to see you at the State Fair.
I cannot wait. Are you bringing the snacks this time? Every week it says you bring the snacks.
It does say I bring the snacks. I'll bring the snacks. I can go to the Minneapolis Club up the street, have them load up a bucket full of stuff for me. And
then
that's what you want at the fair.
Now you're talking.
Now I'm talking. Thanks, Dave.
I'll be there.
All right.
See you.
We'll see you there. Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Dan will be back with us tomorrow. Henry Lake's going to take you up to Twins pregame, 8 p.m. pregame with the Twins in Sacramento to play the Athletics. First pitch at 8:40 here on CCO.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with 2 Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, what if you start with 2 Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.